We've been looking at the whole issue, as I mentioned a little bit here just a moment ago, about the whole issue of being ready for when Jesus comes back. And that's a serious question you and I need to ask ourselves. Are you ready for the reality of Jesus coming back? And that's what we've been looking at, especially in chapter 24, and now we're getting into chapter 25, where Jesus, answering a question that his disciples raised, how will we know when all these things are going to take place? He gives them some teaching concerning his coming back, what the signs are. And then he says, you guys need to watch. You need to be ready. And so after that brief introductory of telling them to watch, he then launches into four parables, and we're looking at the second one today, which talk about that issue of being ready. So last week we looked at the issue of being found faithful. You and I need to be found faithful when he comes. Today we're going to look at, with the parable of the 10 virgin maidens, we're going to look at the issue of being ready, our readiness for when he comes. Last week was an issue of being found faithful. Now it's going to be an issue of being ready, prepared for his coming. And that's what we're going to talk about here. Because there is a sense in which you and I need to live with the aspect of dealing with the fact that sometime in the future, Jesus is going to come back. And it's a fact. He said he would. So I want you to notice with me, we're going to look at this passage, verses 1 through 13 of chapter 25. Listen to the words of Jesus. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. At midnight, a cry was heard, "Behold, the bridegroom is coming out. Go out to meet him." Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "No, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came. And those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered and said, "Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming." My friends, what we're going to look at today in this passage, again, this passage is going to show us two groups of people. Notice with every one of these parables, with what we've seen from Jesus' introductory remarks about you and I being watchful, we saw that in the first part there in the last half of chapter 24. We also saw last week with the faithful and evil servant that the world is divided into two groups of people. Those who are ready and those who are not. Those who are ready, those who are not. Last week he talked about those who are ready, that they're faithful. This week he's going to talk about those who are ready in the sense that they're prepared for his coming. And so we're going to look and see what exactly does that mean today. What does it mean for you and I to be prepared? Because I'm going to be honest with you, what I'm sensing, and I know this as a pastor, as I work with folks, as I guide them in their spiritual lives, there is a sense in which when it comes to you and I in our everyday lives, we're just taking it easy. We're just taking it easy. You say, what do you mean by just taking it easy, George? Well, with all of the teaching that is out there today concerning the coming of Jesus Christ and the teaching of the fact that he's going to come back for his church in the rapture and take us all to be with him and we're going to miss all the terrible stuff that's going to happen here, there is a mindset, and I call it the easy chair mindset. There is a mindset that has enveloped God's people where they think now that all they have to do is just sit back in the easy chair. Now, this one doesn't lean. and just take it easy and come on, Jesus, come back. I'm ready for you. And just take it easy. And go on about their lives acting like, I don't really need to be ready. He's going to come and get me. I trusted in Him. I'm okay. Well, let me tell you something. When you look at these parables, you may not be okay. Because just simply saying you believe is not enough. Because belief is not just expressed in words. Belief is expressed in actions. And that's what we're going to see here in this passage. So notice with me, a couple things I want you to see. First of all, verses 1 to 4, he makes an introductory comment. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like these 10 virgins. And so here's what I want you to see. The first point I want you to see. When we look at the whole issue of being prepared, one will be ready and the other will not. One will be ready and the other will not. And when you look at this passage, I want to help you to understand this passage a little bit. Don't think of this passage in terms of weddings today in America. How many of you, everybody here knows what a wedding today in America is, right? You got a center aisle, bride comes down, the groom's here waiting. You spend lots of money. In fact, I think the average right now, are you ready for this, parents? The average right now for a wedding in America is between $30,000 and $40,000. Don't worry, you're not the ones paying for it, they're borrowing it. So they start out with a nice $30,000 to $40,000 debt for a 30-minute service. So here's my point. So don't think in terms of that. I want you to think, go with me to Palestine 2,000 years ago, and let me explain to you what the culture was like then. And you might say, boy, I wish it was like that here. And it would be nice. So here's what they did. The bride would be at home. And whenever the groom was ready, whenever she would be ready for him to come, whenever the groom was ready, maybe he had to get the dowry together. Back then you had to pay for your woman. She had to get the dowry together or whatever. And what he would do is the bridegroom, whenever he was ready, he would come with his friends in a big wedding procession, and they would go to the bride's house. And there he is with his friends, and they would go to the bride's house, and the call would go out throughout the village, the bridegroom's coming! The bridegroom's coming! And he would go to the house, and then they would do the nuptials there. They would have the ceremony. And then he with his bride, he would then take his bride with her maidens and his friends, and they would go now march all the way back in a procession back to his house where there would be a big banquet and a feast. Isn't that a wonderful way to do it? Now, here's the point. So you got that picture in your mind. So here's these maidens. They're waiting for the day when the bridegroom finally comes for the bride. And they have lamps because it could happen any time of the day. It could happen at night. And so when you think about lamps, I don't want you to think about a candle in the house. I want you to think about, in their culture, what they had was a dome-like bowl in which they would put rags in, and like maybe with olive oil, a certain type of oil, and they would burn those rags with that oil. Now, they could burn for quite a while, and that would light up the area around you so that you could walk in the procession. Now, the foolish ones only had their lamps with just the oil in it. The wise ones brought some extra oil because you don't know how long it's going to be. And so that's what's going on there. So the wise ones, notice what it says, the wise ones were what? Ready for any possible scenario, for any time that he would come back. The foolish ones, were they ready? No. They didn't really take it too seriously. And see, this is what I want you to see. The Bible divides people up into two groups. Those who are serious about Jesus coming back, and those who are not. Those who are prepared for him to come back, and those who are not. Let me just ask you a question. Which one are you? That's a serious question, isn't it? I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, we almost have to say we're just like which ones? The foolish ones. Why? Because I can almost guarantee you, most of us here, when we get up in the morning, we're not thinking about, is this the day the bridegroom's coming? Most of us, as you're getting older, you're thinking, Will my bones work this morning? Will there be a pain and an ache? You know, turn the alarm off. Give me a couple more minutes. Oh, Dad, did you have to turn the light on? That's what we think in terms of, right? And or I hope George isn't long-winded today. Maybe. We'll see. But here's what I want you to see. The world is divided into two people. Now, here's the thing I want you to see. Now we get to verse 5, and there's an interesting quote there. Look at verse 5. But while the bridegroom was delayed, look what they did. They all slumbered and slept. There's nothing wrong with the fact that they're sleeping, but I want you to see a point. There will be a long wait before His coming. I find it interesting. Maybe you're here today and you hold the same view. You might be saying to yourself, you might be saying, George, it's been 2,000 years. It's been 2,000 years, George. He hasn't come back yet. What makes you think He's going to come back? Didn't He say He was going to come back suddenly, immediately? No, He didn't say that. He said He would come back suddenly. Now, let me explain something to you. Suddenly does not mean immediately in the Bible. Suddenly means He's going to appear like that when you're not expecting Him. In fact, that's what He said. He's going to come like a thief in the night. How many of you know there's going to be a thief coming to your house soon? We're not expecting a thief. And so Jesus is saying it's going to come sudden. And what I want you to see is that the Bible here, especially in this parable, gives you an understanding that there's going to be some time. We don't know what the time frame is. We don't know how long. There's going to be a delay, and obviously it's been 2,000 years worth of a delay already, between when He said He would come and the time He would come. So I want you to see that. So you and I, as we're being prepared, we need to understand that as I'm getting ready for Him to come, I'm maybe am talking about being ready for a long haul. But then I also maybe don't know if it isn't going to be a short haul. But the point is I got to be ready. I got to be ready. One of the most interesting armies in the world, you may not, I used to be interested in military things as a boy growing up in a military home. One of the most interesting armies in the world is the Swiss Army, the Army of Switzerland. The Army of Switzerland is interesting because they're a neutral country, so they don't really have a major army, but they do have an army in case they need to defend themselves. But their army is made up of citizen soldiers. Everybody there, a male there, will get trained in the fact of being a soldier. And so whenever, if an attack comes, and obviously they haven't had an attack in a long time, lived through two world wars, okay. But if ever something were to happen, their soldiers, their citizens were then to drop everything that they were doing and be ready to report at the right time to their duty station to serve as a citizen soldier. That's the Swiss Army. In a sense, you and I, even though we haven't seen Jesus coming back anytime soon, although the signs are there, you and I need to be ready for whatever may come, even though the delay may be long. You and I need to be ready with our lives for the fact that Jesus is coming back. And so I want you to see, there will be a long wait before His coming. The next thing I want you to see is this. Look at verse 6. And at midnight, a cry was heard, "Behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet Him." The next thing I want you to see is that His coming will be unexpected. His coming will be unexpected. Think about this for a moment. If you're that young bride, you cashed in about 9 o'clock, you're saying, oh, He didn't come today. And when are you expecting Him to come? Like most sane people, when? Next day. But what's, all of a sudden you're woken up because the word's out. The bridegroom's coming. It's midnight. That's totally unexpected, isn't it? I mean, that's like unreal. I mean, you think about that guy. Poor guy. Why would you do that? Got to live with that woman, getting her up at midnight to marry her. You know, but that's the whole point He's making here. He's using the absurd to tell us a point that you and I need to understand. And the point that you and I need to understand is that Jesus, when He comes, it's going to be unexpected. It's going to be sudden, and it's going to be totally unexpected. Nobody is going to be able, in fact, just this week, I think it was a week ago, somebody gave me a book, some guy making prophecies again. They're always out there. You think one book is discredited, you think another guy should quit writing books, but another guy's come up with another book because he knows what's going to happen. And so his prediction is that it's all going to happen by the end of this year, give or take 6 months. Well, the give 6 months maybe, but not the take. And guess what? We'll go through that and everything will be fine. Unless, you know, I think some guy might by chance hit it. But it won't be because of him. It'll just be because it was the time. And Jesus, His coming, will be unexpected. You won't expect it. That's the point He's making here. But now as we see that, now comes the serious part of what we're looking at here now. So I want you to notice with me verses 7 through 10. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish ones said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "No, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Here's the point I want you to see, and this is a serious point. He's already told us He's coming. And the issue is whether or not you're prepared. The issue is that He's already told us that His coming is going to be unexpected. You don't know when it's going to be. But here's the point as we wrap it up here, as we talk about what does it mean for you and I to be ready. We're going to look at several points here in a row. Here's the first point. The first point I want you to see is this, is that there will not be time to get ready. There will not be time to get ready. Listen to me. The time for preparation is right now. And you don't really know how much longer you have. You say, what are you talking about? Because listen, the implication of this lesson is not just in preparation for Jesus coming. The implication of this lesson is for the possibility that you might go see Him before He comes. What do you mean go see Him? You might die. And the question is, are you ready to meet Him? And the implication of what Jesus is saying, He's saying, here's these 10 virgins, 5 of them are foolish, the bridegroom comes, here comes the wedding procession, they're not ready now, and so guess what they're doing? They're trying to make up for borrowed time, and they're trying to say, well, hey, you got some oil, let me have some oil. And the wise ones say, well, wait a minute now, I can't give you my oil. If I give you my oil, then I don't have anything. Go buy some. So can you try to hit up a hardware store for oil at 12 o'clock midnight? You think, what's the chances of getting oil at 12 o'clock midnight? That's the whole point here Jesus is trying to make to you and I. Jesus is trying to say to us that when He comes, there's not going to be time to get ready. Listen, when you die, there's not going to be time for you to try to get ready. There isn't going to be time. It's a serious thing. So when you think about your life, maybe you're here today and you're not doing what you should be doing. Yes, you believe in Jesus. Yes, you've trusted in Him. But in reality, you kind of set that off. You're going to still do your own thing. You're still going to just do your own thing. And, you know, I've still got time to get that area right in my life. Or I still got time to submit that to the Lordship of Jesus. I still got time. Well, here's the thing. You don't know what time you have. There's another interesting parable that's in the book of Gospel of Matthew, and it's the parable of the rich man. Remember the parable of the rich man who was a farmer, and he built barns, and then he had a great harvest, and he tore down those barns, and he built more barns, and then he said in his soul, You know, so I am satisfied now because he's got all this stuff. And then what does Jesus say? Fool, tonight your soul is required of thee. You don't have time. Can I be honest with you, friends? We're living on borrowed time. You and I are living on borrowed time. What do you mean borrowed time, George? The time we have is called grace time. Does everybody understand what I'm saying? The time you and I have right now is grace time. What do you mean by that, George? Grace time. Grace time is this. Every one of us deserves to die for sin, period. And God's patience level is beyond my patience. I'm a very impatient person. Just ask Lord. You know, when supper? What do you mean I got to wait 5 minutes? You know? We want it now. God's patient level, I mean, he's being pretty patient with us, isn't he? Isn't he? When you think about his patience with us. And so we're living on borrowed time. We're living on the patience of God. But my friends, what we've already seen is that there's a limit to God's patience. There's a limit to God's patience. And so what I want you to see is that when it finally peaks and Jesus comes back as the great conquering king, there isn't going to be time to get ready. There isn't going to be time to get ready. So then I want you to notice something. Here's what happens next. The wonderful thing we see there is this in verse 10, is that those who are ready will be with Jesus. Look at what it says in verse 10. The foolish ones, they go off to try to buy some oil, but notice what it says. And those who were ready went in with him to the wedding. And the door was shut. The wonderful thing is that if you're here, you're ready, your life is ready, you're anticipating. Yeah, you might be sleeping a little bit because the delay is long, but you're ready, you're ready. You're spiritually ready. You're living your life out of that spiritual reality of salvation in your life. And you're ready. The wonderful thing is what does it say? You're going to be with him. Isn't that a wonderful thing? That's a hope for us to have, isn't it? That's a wonderful hope for you and I to have, is the reality of that. If I'm ready, I ain't got nothing to fear. Because when Jesus comes, I know I'm going to be with him. That's a wonderful thing. And so we see that about that. But there's the terrible thing about this passage, because remember I told you, the passage, these passages in chapter 24 and 25, divide the world up into two groups of people. They divide the world up in terms of those who are ready, and it divides it up in terms of those who are not. So I want you to notice what he says there. Look at what happens in verse 11 through 12. And afterwards, the other virgins came also saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. What's going on here? Here's the scary thing. This is why it's so important for you and I to be ready right now. There will not be another chance to enter. There won't be another chance to enter. There's going to be another chance. There's this wonderful philosophy out there that says that, well, if you don't live your life for Jesus now, that's wonderful. When you go to be before him, he's going to give you another chance. That's a wonderful philosophy. It's not in the Bible. Because here's these five foolish maids. They finally, maybe they found oil, or maybe they worked their way through the darkness to where the party is, and they knock on the door, and the bridegroom says, who's there? And they said, Lord, Lord, it's us. And he's like, who are you? I don't know you. That's a terrible statement. And they're not allowed in. They're not allowed in. They're not allowed into heaven. Because remember, that's what Jesus said. The kingdom of heaven is like this. They're not allowed in. In fact, let me just give you an illustration to help you to understand the finality of it. Back in October of 1994, the Chicago Tribune had an article that was entitled, The Supreme Court Turns a Deaf Ear to 1,600 Appeals. And here's what it said. After a three-month recess, on October 3rd, 1994, the Supreme Court of the United States opened its 94-95 term. According to the New York Times News Service, the court's legal business for the day, which summed up with one word, no. The court announced that it refused to hear more than 1,600 cases. The name and docket numbers of the rejected appeals covered 68 typewritten pages. For those cases, that was it. The final word, no, we're not going to hear you. There's something terrifying about a final judgment. The Supreme Court says no, that's it. There's no other appeals. There's no other arguments. The books are sealed. The decision is final. Now here's the point. On the great day of judgment, there will also be a terrible crescendo of no. No, you can't enter into my kingdom. And the doors will be shut forever. No appeal, no time to change one's mind, no time to get your life right. Those who have rejected Jesus will live forever in a lost opportunity for eternity. No. No. That's what's going on there. It won't be another chance. We say, I got time right now. How do you know you've got time? Nobody here knows they got time. There's not going to be another chance. In fact, there's a scary passage. I've never mentioned it to you before, but it parallels even the words that are said here. If you go over, just turn over real quickly to Matthew chapter 7. Listen to what he says in verse 21 through 23. I've mentioned this to you before. I'll read these verses to you. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, remember that's what the maiden said. That's what they said in verse 12. Lord, Lord, open to us. Notice what it says. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. So there he is. He's talking about those who will enter, and it's those who will do the will of your Father in heaven. Now, how do we do the will of the Father in heaven? First of all, by being saved, and that enables us to do the will of the Father. But notice what it says. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, cast out demons in your name, done many wonders in your name? Then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. You see the parallel there? Again, Lord, Lord, and he says what? Depart from me, I never knew you. Isn't that exactly what he said over in verse 11? Lord, Lord, open to us. And he said, assuredly I say to you, I do not know you. There's not going to be another chance. It's going to be final. That's the scary thing. So then how does Jesus sum it up? And here's my next point I want you to see. He sums it up in verse 13 by this statement. Be ready. Be ready. Look at what he says in verse 13. Here's what he's pointing to his disciples. He's saying, guys, you heard my parable. Here's what I want you to get from this. Look at what he says. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. He says, okay, George, what is he trying to say here? He's saying, guys, listen to me. I've already told you the world's divided up into two groups of people, those who are ready and those who are not. I've shared with you through this story what happens to those who are ready. They go. They come with me. I've shared with you what happens to those who are not ready. That's it. There's no other chance. Guys, be ready. That's my message to you today. Be ready. So here, I got three thoughts for you as we close our time. Number one, from this passage, what do I take home for you and I? This question. This point I want you to see. Recognize your responsibility. What's Jesus trying to tell us out of this passage? The issue of being ready falls on who? Me? Is for myself. But really, it falls on you, doesn't it? When you think about the fact today that when Jesus comes or when you go to be with him through death, the issue of preparedness for that time, the responsibility of that falls on who? You, myself, for our individual lives. It falls on us individually. Recognize your responsibility to be prepared for Jesus' coming. See, it isn't going to hold water in that day to say to him, well, you know, Jesus, it's because of my mama. It's because of my daddy. You know, if he hadn't beat me like he did, I would have paid more attention. Or it's because of that preacher from 20 years ago, or because of George. He didn't give me enough teaching to help me to grasp and understand. Listen, can I be honest with you? I'm not responsible. In fact, 10 years ago, I learned that I'm not responsible. I gave up the responsibility for people 10 years ago because I was reading through 1 Samuel chapter 8, and there's the great prophet, the great judge, Samuel, and Israel comes to him and they want a king. And so he's pretty upset by that because they only have one king, that's God, but now they want a physical king. So he goes and he prays. If you can read this in 1 Samuel, I'll give you the paraphrase here. And Samuel, God says to Samuel, Samuel, don't worry about it. It's not you they're rejecting. It's me. And you know what I gathered from that? It's like, George, don't worry about it. You give the teaching. But you're not responsible. Who's responsible? You are. See, recognize your responsibility. Are you ready? Then here's the next point I want you to see. Don't put it off. Don't put it off. Because here's what we'll do, because we're good old Americans. Yeah, I know I got to do that, but, you know, there's always tomorrow. Isn't that what we do, guys? Wife's got that big honey-do list. You know what I'm talking about? It's written on a roll of paper of stuff that you got to do. And, you know, you knock one thing off and two things come on top of it. And your wife says, and you hear, honey, aren't you going to do that today? Yeah, you got the whole day off today. Yeah, but, you know, there's always tomorrow. Isn't that what we do? And that's our lifestyle. We think in terms of that. Well, you know, I've got tomorrow, you know. Lord, I know you want me to do this, and Lord, I know you want me to change in this area, and I know you want me to submit this area of my life to you, and Lord, you want me to deal with this sin issue, and Lord, you want me to do that, but, you know, I got tomorrow. Listen, when it comes to preparedness for when Jesus comes, you don't have tomorrow. And if you do, be thankful for it. Because you're not promised tomorrow. Don't put it off. Don't put off being ready for His coming. Don't put it off. Are you ready? Are you living your life in readiness? I want you to understand that. And then that brings me to the final point then. Are you ready? Listen to me. Don't close your Bible yet. Don't put away your pen. I've asked this question now. This will be the third week in a row. And so it can get kind of old. And you in your mind can be thinking, well, we're at the end now. Hurry up, George. Wrap it up. But this is a serious question. And nobody else can tell you the answer. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready to meet Jesus? Let me just stop for a moment. When we talk about Jesus, I'm not talking about the Jesus that you see in the pictures that you remember from Sunday school, Jesus knocking on the door, or Jesus walking with his sheep and he's got the one sheep on his arm, you know, around his neck, and, or Jesus with the children. And you know, those are the pictures we have of Jesus, friendly Jesus. No, I don't want you to think in terms of that Jesus. I want you to think in terms of Jesus of Revelation. Eyes like fire. The Word of God like a sword coming out of His mouth. Executing judgment, ruling the nations with a rod of iron. Holy. When John sees Him, he falls down on his face like dead. Because of the awesomeness and holiness of who Jesus is. Are you ready to meet that Jesus? That's a question you and I have to ask ourselves. Are you ready to meet the Creator of the universe? That's a serious question. Are you ready? Are you ready? Don't let it slip by. Are you ready? Let's pray.